Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 20 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're going to be talking about what? The power of when? Oh man, you're going to love this. And our expert is Dr. Michael Bruce. But before we start, I just want to make sure you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
We're going to be talking about the power of when. Chronobiology. Yeah, you're going to learn more. Dr. Michael Bruce is a clinical psychologist and both a diplomat of the American Board of Sleep Medicine and a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. His book is called The Power of When: Discover Your Chronotype and the Best Time to Eat Lunch, Ask for a Raise, Have Sex. Hey, I didn't know that was there. Write a novel, take your meds, and more. Huh, what's this all about? Well, as it turns out, Dr. Bruce is an expert in a specialty that is so amazing. It's all about understanding your daily rhythm and knowing what it is and how to optimize it with groundbreaking new research and a program for getting back in sync with your natural rhythm by making minor changes to your daily routine. Michael, welcome to Her. So good to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I've got this book, The Power of When, right in front of me. Here is your fabulous book. I could not put this down because I really wanted to know when to eat lunch and do good things like this. And so I was just so excited with this. So we're going to take it step by step because I know all of our listeners on the Her podcast really want to understand what the heck is a chronotype.
Sure. So chronotype is actually a classification of genetically when your biology wants you to go to sleep. Now, many people may not have heard the word chronotype before, but in fact, almost everybody has experienced these things in some point in time in their lives. As an example, have you ever heard of somebody being called an early bird or a night owl? Because those are two of the four chronotypes. So once people
I'm a lark. I like calling it a lark. I'm a lark
so
and I'm married
bird.
To an owl. Oh, boy.
Right. So I can teach you a lot about that. So here's what was interesting. And let me maybe step back for a moment and explain to you why did I write the book and how did I come across
it.
So I've been actively practicing sleep specialist. I've been in practice for 16 years. And I'm an insomnia specialist. That's what I do best is I work with people who can't fall asleep or who can't stay asleep. And I had a patient come in and I was using my normal techniques with her and they, quite frankly, were not working. And I couldn't figure out why. And when I have a patient where they don't work, I really kind of dig my heels in and try to figure out what's going on. And it turned out that she turned to me one time and she said, Dr. Bruce, it's not that I can't fall asleep and it's not that I can't stay asleep. She said, I sleep at the wrong time. I said, what do you mean you sleep at the wrong times? She said, if it was up to me, I would go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and I would wake up at 9:30 and that would be perfect for me. But I can't do that because I've got kids and I've got a job. She said, I sleep fine when somebody just lets me sleep the hours that I want. Now, I had heard of shift work sleep problems, or when you look at teenagers, you know, how teenagers like to stay up late and like to sleep late, you know, that kind of thing. I've got two teenagers at home now. So, you know, it's a lot to kind of think about and said, you know, usually we don't see something like that in an adult. So I started to look into the literature a little bit more, and I discovered that there were over 250 studies looking at people who had these different types of chronotypes. So I decided to do an experiment with this patient. So I called her boss, who, by the way, was about ready to fire her, and I said, would it be possible for her to come in 2 hours later and stay 2 hours later? And he said, I really like her, and I want to see her do well, and I really am about to fire her because she can't show up to work on time. She's falling asleep in meetings. She just hasn't been doing what I need her to do. So yeah, let's try it. Let's give it a whirl. So we did. And within 7 days, I called him back and he said to me, Michael, this is unbelievable. He said, her work product is improved. She's showing up at work on time. She's energetic. She participates in meetings. It's like having her back, you know? And then I said, okay, so now we understood one thing. So then I talked to her family and her husband said to me, you know what? She's easier to get along with. And her kids said, mom's a lot happier and more fun to be around. And so I started to take that experience plus the different literature that I had looked up to try to help this woman. And I said, I wonder what else I can influence. It turns out that everybody has an internal biological rhythm, right? A circadian rhythm. And our hormones actually flow on a very predictable pattern, all based on the sleep-wake cycle. So when you wake up, certain hormones go up. When you go to sleep, certain hormones go up. When you go to sleep, other hormones go down. And when you wake up, other hormones go down. So what I decided to do is once I started looking at the chronotypes, I tried to figure out, well, are there only two, right? Like you just mentioned, the lark and the owl. And I actually fall into the category of an owl, but I have lots of patients who don't fall into either category. And then I had this really weird category of patients that were just insomniacs. They didn't have any pattern whatsoever. So what I discovered was is that historically we used to have an assessment tool, a questionnaire, if you will, that people could take to determine you early or late. And it really left out everybody in the middle, and it left out people that didn't have really high sleep drive, or people who I call insomniacs. And so I actually recreated the tool. And so for anybody listening, if they want, they can actually go to www.thepowerofwhenquiz.com. And for free, they can take the quiz and figure out which chronotype they are. So once you figure out which bucket you fall into, and I know what your hormone distribution is, I then matched that to 50 different activities that we do during the day. Because what I wanted to see was, could it be that there were certain times during the day when we did things better than others? I know when I was writing this book, there were certain times of day where I could read research and I could just zip through it and understand it and, you know, really get a lot out of it. And then there were other times of the day, my gosh, it was like putting me to sleep. And it was the same research. So I figured there had to be these times that were in people's lives where we could do this. And so that's basically what we did. And so by going through the literature and really paying a lot of close attention, I was able to figure out the best time to have sex, eat a cheeseburger, run a mile, ask your boss for a raise, you name it.
I absolutely loved that. And I mean, I took the quiz. I know what I am. Okay.
What are you?
So we're going to go. Oh my. Hello. I'm a lion, buddy.
Of course you are.
I mean, seriously, read this thing. It's unbelievable. You know, you have four of these categories: bears, wolves, dolphins, lions.
Yep.
And there, you know, you wrote the book beautifully. And as a
book writer
myself, as you're well aware, you know, I always appreciate one that I could actually flip and read and understand, because not everyone's gifted. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And, you know, here I'm reading under lion. Okay. So, four key personality traits: conscientiousness,
right,
stability. Well, my husband would question that. But anyway, stability, practicality, optimism. Oh, yeah. Four key behaviors: overachieving. Oh, yeah. Prioritizing health and fitness, I think. Seeking positive interactions, rock on. And strategizing, always. And then sleep alertness pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Lions wake up bright-eyed at dawn. I mean, dawn for me is kind of late. I'm just screwing around here. But lions wake up bright-eyed at dawn or earlier, start to feel tired in the late afternoon and fall asleep easily. Most alert, noon. Most productive, morning. Naps, lions hardly ever nap. They'd rather be doing something useful. Seriously, I thought you were just, you know, playing with me and were writing about me. I'm not even kidding you. You were spot on. So that's a lion. So tell us what a bear, wolf, and dolphin are.
Sure. So lions make up about 15%. And just as an FYI, I chose lions because Lions actually, as mammals, do to have very, they do rise very early. That's where they have their first kill, is early in the morning. And so each one of the mammals actually follows the rhythm that we do as human beings. The bears make up the majority of the population, about 50-55%. And these are the glue that keeps society together. They're my extroverts. They're very affable, very fun-loving people. These are the people where you sit down at lunch and they're always telling the funny story, or they know the gossip that's going on at the water cooler at work. They have really good feel for work-life balance. They like to play hard, but they like to work hard as well. And they're really kind of that glue that keeps society together. You know, if you want to get things done, that your bears are your best bet. Lions are fantastic leaders. Lions also, one of the things that you don't know about lions, or you probably do because you read the book now, is lions like to make a list, and they like to go straight down the list, and they like to go from A to B to C to D. They're very strategic in their use of their energy, and they love to get things accomplished. But I will say that lions do have one small shortcoming, and that's that because they get so tired so early, sometimes socially, that can be a bit of a hindrance. You know, when I talk to some of my lion clients, they say, I get all kinds of stuff done, but I can't go to dinner and a movie because I'll fall asleep in the movie. You know, that's a very common thing that I hear.
You know, that is so funny you should mention that, because I remember specifically, literally, my head fell right over on a couch in someone's house while we were at, you know, there was a little party going on, and I was out, and everyone was smiling and laughing because I was out for the count. I can push it a little bit, there's no question, mm-hmm. but I would rather an earlier, you know, soiree than something where people say, hey, let's get all together at 10 o'clock at night. Not.
Right.
right. And interesting.
It's fascinating. And so my wolves are my night people, what you refer to as your night owl, right? And I'm a wolf. So I rarely go to bed before midnight. But it's interesting is I'm a wolf that doesn't require a tremendous amount of sleep. I've been a 6.5 hour sleeper my whole life. So I go to bed at midnight and I wake up at 6:30, and that works perfectly for me. And it's funny because both my wife and I are wolves. And I remember when we were dating, I would say, you know, what time do you want me to pick you up? And she'd say 8:30. And so we'd go to dinner and we'd finish dinner by, like, let's say 9:30, quarter to 10. Then we'd go to the movies from 10 or 10:30 to about 12:30. And then we'd go out for drinks or dessert afterwards. And it worked out perfectly because we were both night people. You know, we were both wolves. And we just kind of fell into that whole, we kind of lockstepped in, and it worked out perfectly. Wolves are kind of interesting people. We're a little bit more introverted than many people, but we're also super creative. We have a tendency to be artists or musicians or authors or actors. And although we're introverted and we're not necessarily the life of the party, if you do kind of break through our wall initially, we are super loyal friends, and you can't shut us up once we really get to know you. And so there's this kind of interesting trust thing that has to happen. And then all of a sudden, once we're there, boy, oh boy, watch out, because we are chatty Cathys, that's for sure. And wolves make up about 15% of the population. And then dolphins are my troubled sleepers. And I chose dolphins because most people don't know this, but dolphins sleep unihemispherically, which means half of their brain is asleep at any given time, while the other half is alert and looking for predators or looking for food while they're swimming around. And I thought that was
I've got a lot of friends like that.
Oh, yeah. Right, exactly, right? So I thought it was kind of a unique representation of people who never quite get to sleep. You know, and my dolphins are my problem sleepers. These are the people that I have a tendency to see in my clinic quite a bit. They're type A personalities more times than not, even though my lions are too. My lions are type A personalities, but they're highly productive. My dolphins tend to be type A personalities, but they have such an obsession with being perfect that they have a tendency to that perfectionism gets in their way, and they don't actually get things accomplished like they would normally want to get accomplished. Super intelligent people. A lot of good comes from dolphins. The book really does a lot of good for the dolphins in particular, because it really helps them understand sort of what their sleep parameters should be and then when they should do different things.
Interesting. So, you know, as you're putting all of these together, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I know people, and I think myself, who may have changed my chronobiology with aging. Yes. When you're younger, I mean, heck, mm-hmm. I'd be up all night, you know, partying and having a good time
absolutely.
And whatever. So tell us what happens with chronobiology in aging. What goes on?
So it's interesting. So I call that chronolongevity. It's exactly what it sounds like. As we get older, we have a tendency to shift. So it's interesting. If you're a bear, which again makes up the most of the population, you have a tendency to lean towards becoming more of a lion. So as we get older, we know that our melatonin is not produced in near the abundance as when we were younger. About age 55 to 60, melatonin starts to decrease in terms of production levels. And so our sleep becomes a little bit more fragmented. Lots of people either become lions, where they're falling asleep earlier and waking up much earlier, or in some cases become dolphins. And sometimes that dolphin chronotype is there because of medical issues. So being medically frail, on multiple medications, having different medical problems that are disruptive of sleep. So you can, over the course of time, change your chronotype. But it appears to be very stable between the ages of about 20 to about 45. Now, when we talk about kids, as I was saying before, you know, I've got two teenagers. They're both wolves. So they love to stay up until 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're more than happy to sleep until 11:30, 12 o'clock the next day.
Wow. Okay. I mean, so my question then is, all right, I get the shift then. I'm just laughing because I was thinking, you know, when I was at the NIH, I'd love to come in. My favorite time to really come in and be, you know, super productive as I began my experiments in my laboratory was probably, you know, around 8:30, you know, maybe even 9 or whatever. But I had this one very annoying international, I won't say the country, teammate in there who liked to hog the, you know, experimental equipment. And would always be in there an hour earlier than me, and then it would take me forever to get my experiments done because she'd always be on it. So I thought, okay, I'll outsmart you. So I came in an hour earlier. So now I was two hours earlier. And whatever lion-like tendencies I had were really super cemented now because I was up there with a Tweety bird starting my experiments. And I had reached her threshold because there's no way in holy heck that she was ever going to get up earlier than me.
That's funny.
You know, you just make it work. Now, my question is, what if you're married to someone who's opposite? How do you put that together? I thought that opposites attract. You and your wife aren't.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So opposites attract, but the opposites don't always stay together. Which is kind of interesting. If you look at the data on marriage, the more similar you are to your soulmate, as it were, oftentimes the easier it is to get along. But that doesn't mean that, you know, people that are opposite don't get along or have a higher divorce rate. I just think there's a little bit more marital conflict there. But, you know, when we're looking at communication, because that's really what we're talking about here, right, is communication.
Right.
And knowing and understanding, as an example, if you're a lion and your partner is a wolf, what do you do? So the first question everybody asks me is, well, what about sex, Michael? When are we supposed to have sex? So let's just address that one right here. So first of all, it's kind of interesting if you look at the data on sex. In fact, 73% of the time when people have sex, it's primarily just based out of convenience, okay? It's we're both lying in bed. It's 11 o'clock at night. We don't have very many clothes on. You look over to your partner, hey, you interested? Yeah, sure, why not? And then you go ahead, right? That's what happens roughly 73% of the time.
Yeah, okay? You're right. You're right.
I know. I mean, come on, you know, let's, you know, if we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it. But, you know, when you look at it, the desire, you know, issue, and when do you actually have a desire for sexual activity? Here's what's so fascinating is think about the hormones that are necessary to have a sexual encounter, right? So you need, for men and let's talk about heterosexual couples right now. So you need high levels of estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. You want some cortisol and some adrenaline. And then you want all those to be high and you want melatonin to be low, right? So you and I both know what happens at 11 o'clock at night. Is that the right profile for the time to have sex?
Hello.
Not even close. Right. It's not even close, right? Because all of the things that you want high levels are low, and everything that you want a low level of is high at 11 o'clock at night. It's just so unbelievable to me. So So I am giving all of our listeners the prescription. Everybody should try having sex at between 9 and 10 in the morning on Saturday morning, just to give it a whirl and see.
What do I do like with my... Oh, no. I have to bag my yoga session.
I think you'll enjoy the sex more than you might enjoy the yoga. I'm just
saying. Michael.
Give
just saying.
You never know. But it's truly fascinating. And so what I did in the book was I actually created a matrix, because one of the things that we know is for our late night people or our wolves, their melatonin may spill over in the morning. And our early birds or our lions, they may be up and raring to go. So I actually created a matrix where you put in your chronotype and then you put in your partner's chronotype, and it gives you an early evening time for sex and then an earlier morning time for sex. And I did that for heterosexual couples, for gay couples, and for lesbian couples. And I did it all three differently because, of course, if you have a lesbian couple, you have women have very different hormones than men do.
Yeah.
And so you've actually got to work the times out a little bit differently.
Oh, fascinating. Absolutely. Can I just ask you, what happens if one of the couple has sleep apnea and they're on that little machine, right? The BiPAP and CPAP.
Yeah. So the good news here is if they're consistently using their CPAP or their BiPAP, then it does not have an effect on libido. It actually increases libido. Speaking of libido, getting back to the idea of sex in the morning, most men wake up with an erection. If that's not Mother Nature telling you what time you're supposed to have sex, I don't know.
Yay, right? Mother Nature. You go, girl.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. So back to sleep apnea. So it's not that bad after all.
It's really not. You know, and here's the thing is, a fairly large percentage of the male population has sleep apnea. We think somewhere between 18 and 22%. Depending upon levels of health and blood pressure and things like that. That's a big number. And that's the ratio of that is men to women is 2-1 until women hit menopause, and then it becomes 1-1. So, you know, once women kind of hit that 55 age, 60 age range, sleep apnea is right in there, and it can have some pretty significant effects. I mean, we know that untreated sleep apnea oftentimes leads to refractory hypertension. And so for folks out there that don't know what that means, that's hypertension that does not respond well to medication. We know that over the course of time, it can lead to atrial fibrillation, which is a fairly serious heartbeat irregularity that can be very difficult to control. We've even got data now to show that it leads to stroke, heart attack, even death. So, you know, sleep apnea is not something to fool around with. A lot of people have it. And by the way, CPAP is not the only method of treatment. Right. So there are mouthpieces called oral appliances or mandibular advancement devices. What these do is these slowly, by a millimeter at a time, bring your bottom jaw forward, which thereby opens up your airway. And that can be very helpful. And for those of you who don't know what sleep apnea is, it's where your throat literally collapses onto itself because it's narrow or become congested, or quite frankly, if you have too much weight around your neck. And so there's several different things. There are surgical interventions, there are weight loss interventions, and there's new stuff coming out on the market all the time.
Wow. And there are also some people who, it's also hereditary. Know people
it
who
be,
have
yeah.
Completely normal body. They don't have, you know, obesity or whatever. But they may have a more muscular neck. And this is true in a lot of guys, especially. You know, one last thing here that a lot of folk want to know this, Michael. So hold on. Now,
right.
How about eating?
Sure.
You know, when are we supposed to eat? Well, first of all, Americans, of course, have made eating a second career. We just eat 24/7. So the whole thing is sort of a cluster of craziness out there. So talk to us about eating.
Sure. So in the book, one of the things we're able to do is identify the best times for each of the chronotypes to eat based on when we know their metabolic rate is at its highest. So, you know, first of all, I've always believed that you should eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper, right? So your biggest meal should be breakfast, your medium-sized meal should be lunch, and your smallest meal should be dinner. Historically, that's not how we see things here in the United States very often, but it really should be what you're kind of thinking through. And for my lions, you know, I actually like them eating within about an hour to an hour and a half of them waking up. And one of the things I always want to bring in here is coffee, because one of the things that the cardinal mistake that so many people make is they drink coffee as their first beverage in the morning. It should be water. It should not be coffee. Most people don't realize this, but while you're sleeping, you breathe out almost a liter of water a night. So the very first thing I have every one of my patients do is they have to drink a full bottle of water right when they wake up in the morning to hydrate themselves. That's number one. Number two, cortisol and adrenaline are the two things that have pulled you out of a state of unconsciousness. And when you add coffee to cortisol and adrenaline, it's like adding weak tea to cocaine. Okay. It doesn't do any good. So what I'd rather you do is wait until your cortisol levels begin to drop, which is about 90 to 120 minutes after you wake up. Then if you drink your coffee, you'll get that little bit of an uptick as far as energy is concerned. It can be much more helpful. So if my lions are waking up at 5:30, I don't want them drinking their first cup of coffee until 8 o'clock. Now that is also works out well for them, because if they're waking up at 5:30, I want them having a nice, high protein, high fat breakfast. So you're looking at things like, you know, egg white omelet with avocado, let's say, or something along those lines, because we want them to have protein food as well as fat food. And the reason that we want the high fat is because that's really where a brain gets a lot of its energy. And the brain really needs to kick in the morning. And that's one of the things that they can do. From a lunch perspective, again, my lions are going to be eating earlier. And remember, bears, really, society works best with bears. So if you're a bear, you're waking up around 7:30, you're eating your breakfast by 8, 8:30. You're having lunch between 11:30 and 12:30. And dinner, a little bit on the normal side between 5:30 and 6:30. A lion, like you, actually does everything about an hour and a half earlier. And a wolf, like me, does everything about an hour and a half to 2 hours later. And so that's what makes it really, really interesting, is being able to figure out what your right time is, and the right foods can actually keep you from gaining too much weight. One last quick point is, in my book, we talk about a really interesting study where they took mice. And they had three different settings, and the mice had the first group, and they all had the same amount of food. The first group could eat whenever they wanted in a 24-hour time, much the way you were describing how a lot of us are doing it out there. Is, you know, whatever you want, graze, eat a little here, eat a little there, but you've got this cup full of food, and you can eat it 24 hours a day. The second group only had 12 hours where that cup full of food was made available. Same amount of food, same caloric intake of the food. Then the third group only had 6 hours. What was so fascinating is the round-the-clock eaters gained almost 20%. The 12-hour eaters stayed stable, and the 6-hour eaters lost almost 20%.
All right. So what's your bottom line?
Bottom line
recommendation for folks then?
If you can figure out your chronotype, keep your eating window around 8 hours. And that will be one of the surefire ways to be able to keep you, you know, slim and trim and healthy.
Absolutely. And there's no question, you and I know the science pretty cold, fairly brilliant work being done out there. A lot of the work you were quoting, Sachin Panda at the Salk Institute and others who have done some really great work with circadian rhythm and really trying to understand, the power of when, which is why you're the title of your book is so rock on, but also the fact that we globally, not everybody, but in most of our civilized countries, what we've done is we've strayed so far from our typical primal genetics as it relates to circadian rhythm, especially that we're suffering for it. And so this is why your book is exquisitely timely. It's very timely to help bring us up to date on the science and to help us also understand who we are. You know, what's our category? What best fits our own DNA and our rhythms? Basically, how to get back into sync. I just love it. And this has been a wonderful podcast. We've been talking about the power of when, really understanding chronobiology and your own rhythms. And we've been doing this with Dr. Michael Bruce, who's a clinical psychologist and author of a fabulous book. Run out and get it. It's called The Power of When. The websites are thepowerofwhen.com, where you can also take his quiz, too. And also thesleepdoctor.com, where you can learn a lot more about what Dr. Michael Bruce does 24/7. Oops, no, he doesn't. He's a wolf. He does it at night. I forgot.
There you go.
Michael, thank you for being on Her. We just loved learning all about chronotype. All right. So welcome to listen, we are so honored to have all of these fabulous guests on with us on the Her podcast. And Dr. Michael Bruce is just an excellent example of the amazing people that we have to share their wit and wisdom, and usually a heavy dose of wit while we're at it. It's all about edutainment, you know? So while you're at it, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds or so and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Well, because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you please leave a review? We love to read them. So leave a review. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD. You could also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com and check out all of our past episodes as well. Choose one, listen. And speaking of listening, thanks. Stay well.